Hi, everybody. This is Chase Masterson, Lita from Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Women Talk Sci-Fi.
Hello, this is Eugenia Stapira.
And this is Jerry Donaldson, and welcome back to another episode of Women Talk Sci-Fi.
And I'm so excited.
It is very exciting, because this is a special show, and it's for a special occasion.
It's 50 years
of Star Trek.
Yes.
So this is our special tribute episode to a special show.
Very special show.
Special to us anyway.
Definitely. And I think in the world, well, in the Western world, certainly has a strong influence in a lot of things that has happened in our technology.
Well, I'm sure these people know, I've gone back to university to study anthropology, and I did popular culture last semester. And, of course, what did I have to mention when I was discussing popular culture? Because Eugenia is my editor, so to speak, for my assignments. And, of course, I mentioned
Star Trek.
Because it started popular culture, basically. If it wasn't for Star Trek, we wouldn't have fan cons.
No, we wouldn't. Star Trek was the very first TV series that the fans decided that they wanted to meet together, but not only, and probably there had been groups before that met together, but never to the stage of actually having the actors present and being part of that.
So Star Trek has a lot to answer for in terms of the money we spend these days going to fan conventions.
Definitely. And
particularly Eugenia's wallet.
Yes, I do like the occasional memorabilia. And
occasional?
I do love autographs.
She does. She is a complete autograph hog.
Definitely. There is a special name for me, which I can't think of at the moment, but yes.
Obsessive is the word I would use.
But Star Trek, we've seen documentaries on the influence that Star Trek has on inventions, on people's lives and how they've taken the dreams that they saw and the visions they saw, that flipping of the phone, you know, the recorder,
in science,
the replica.
In particularly, yes. You lift up an iPad or a tablet now, what are you actually doing? Exactly what they did in Star Trek.
Mm.
The communicator, we all have one in our pocket now, don't we? I mean, the tricorder, our mobile phones are do half of what the tricorder did.
Mobile, there are medical beds now that when you lie on will take your pulse, will, you know, test your temperature and all that type
and
of thing.
And there was, at one stage, one of those tricorders was actually invented where they just pointed a stick at you,
mm-hmm,
and they could get it. I mean, and last time I was at the doctor's or something, they took a temperature by touching my forehead.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of things in terms of what we saw are now real from Star Trek. But there are many people out there who've actually got a doctorate in Star Trek.
They do.
I mean, Star Trek is one of the most studied shows. And it was amazing, I think, and why it was studied so much. It looked at social issues and presented them in ways, in popular culture ways that we can say now, that influenced commentary. So we had the racism episode where Frank Gorshin played two characters of opposite colours on one side. So one side of his face was white and the other side was black. And the other guy had a black on the other side and white on the other side. So they had this war going on, and they were the last two people were fighting over this racism.
Mm.
So they introduced that. They introduced the first interracial kiss.
Yes.
And we had little people actually acting in it, which wasn't seen often in roles outside of the circus kind of freak show thing.
True.
And they weren't freaks per se in this show.
And then you had a bridge that was filled with every nationality, including alien, whatever that might be.
Nuclear vessels.
Yes.
Or nuclear vessels.
And then you had, you know, the Asian, you had
the African American.
I guess as a child watching it, didn't see the importance of that. But as I've grown older, and I guess I understand now the whole thing that was happening in America at the time, especially when it came to what the Afro-American could do and couldn't do, and what our Indigenous people in Australia could and couldn't do.
I think I mentioned in a earlier podcast, as we're talking, and old memories come flooding back. Well, I did mention when I was a young child, because I was from an area that was divided in, mm-hmm, two different societies. So it was very interesting for me to see how all these different people work together.
Mm.
And I think that maybe influenced some of my personal values since that time. So Star Trek, not only did I enjoy it, but influenced me to a certain degree in terms of my values for life.
Well, see, for me, when I was watching the show, and I came to the show a lot later in life, I heard about it. I've watched Next Gen before I actually saw episodes of the series, the original series, because you just couldn't get them on DVD.
Well, no, or video, in fact.
No. I think we got...
further back than that.
I think DVD. We got...
Beta? Did I hear someone say beta?
I think our local budget store was selling knockoffs from Japan that when you're watching the series was, you know, like through... fog.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I saw Star Trek.
Although I saw Star Trek when it was transmitted on United Kingdom television.
Yes, yeah. And a lot of people did, but I grew up in the country and we didn't have that. But I knew about
Star Trek. Poor deprived child.
But the thing is, I knew about Star Trek. And I guess I saw the original Star Trek to begin with from the movie. So when it came out, which was soon after the phenomena of Star Wars, so Star Trek thought they would get on the bandwagon as well. That was probably the first time I ever saw the original crew in a screen situation, and I loved it.
I must admit, I'm not. There are two kinds of Star geeks.
Yes.
There are Star Trek geeks, and there are Star Wars geeks, and I fall very, very firmly into the realm of the Star Trek geek.
Whereas I am not in the middle, I sort of waver to Star Trek, but I'm closer to Star Wars than Jerry is.
Yeah, absolutely. So sorry out there, Star Trek trumps Star Wars.
But it's amazing just even in our language how Star Trek has influenced different things. I mean, who doesn't want to have a transporter? You know, who didn't want to have...
A replicator. Don't have to do any washing or cooking. Come on.
And they're called medical tricorders and they're called communicators and all that type of thing. They're called iPads. You know, they were called pads.
P-A-double-D.
Mm. Mm. So it's been there for so long. And for 50 years it's been there. It hasn't always been constant, but it's been...
Doctor Who, isn't it? Yeah. Doctor Who's not been constant, but it's been in the psyche of popular culture constant for those 50 years because people kept bringing it back.
Yes.
Like Doctor Who, they kept bringing it back.
And who doesn't know, even though it was never used in any series or any movies, the quote, "Beam me up, Scotty."
And who doesn't, which is really in popular culture, but who doesn't know the name of James T. Kirk?
Definitely.
I mean... in so many things. And we were at a quiz show the other night, and it was a music one. Geeks, not music people. But there was this song, what is the only two English words that's actually in this song? And I knew it, and it was, in fact, Captain Kirk in 99 Luftballons, if you want to go and look it up, a German song.
Mm.
Good song, actually, even though good music, even though you don't know what they're saying. But except for James T. Kirk, Captain Kirk.
So it is incredible, I guess, how much a TV show can take the imagination of fandom. And fandom is where this show got its drive from because it only lasted, I think, 79 episodes.
Three seasons.
But it was actually fandom that kept that whole flame of Star Trek alive. You hear stories of people in America, because they couldn't watch the reruns in their state, would travel to another city to be able to sit and watch the TV show. And then I guess Paramount then decided, well, there's still this rumbling of this show. You know, 20 years later, let's bring it back. And so Next Gen was born, and from there we had Deep Space Nine and then Voyager. We had the cartoon series, animated series in the middle of there, which voiced all the original actors. And then Enterprise.
And then
we went into movies in between all that, and now we've got a whole new genre of movie, which is in that Star Trek universe once removed.
So to speak, yeah. Yes, it was reimagined.
Slided sideways.
And this is a complete and total boast. We have met all six captains. Yay, that's a real kicker. All six captains. So we've met the five series captains and the movie captain currently. We have to see what happens with the next, because it's coming out again. I mean, there's a new show coming out.
There is.
It'll be interesting to see how they manipulate that universe again.
Well, I know at the time when Enterprise came out, and I thought, oh, a prequel. I don't know if I want a prequel. Because how can you show technology that was sort of new in the 60s that is okay because it's a 60s show and then try and reimagine it into a show that is a prequel, but you've still got to use modern technology to appeal to a modern audience? I think they did it well.
I think they did it well. I have to agree. I mean, they didn't over-technologically assert themselves within Enterprise. It was very much machinery as opposed to technology in a way.
It was. And it was about discovering this.
It's just still a spaceship.
Yes. I mean, they didn't have a universal translator until later, so they were developing that. They didn't have a proper transporter, and they were developing that. So, yes, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. It actually worked out very, very well. So we've got this wonderful universe that was started and could have as easily have finished after the pilot episode. Because basically the first pilot episode went out and it was canned because it was too cerebral. The executives at that time to Roddenberry said, we're not going to do this because it's too much for people. They don't want to see
which was that. Wrong.
Yeah.
Which they were totally wrong on. And I think sometimes money-making people think that their audiences are stupider than they actually really are.
Mm.
And they, as you said, went and remade a second pilot.
Which was very unheard of. And you know who we have to thank for that?
Lucille Ball.
Yes, we do. Desilu Studios decided, with Lucille at the head, that it was worth having a second
try.
People
might know who the hell Lucy Ball is.
No, they probably don't.
Very good American comedian. Very innovative for her time.
Very much so.
So if you haven't, go on YouTube and have a look at Lucy Ball.
Yes. But she...
Or Carmichael or whatever, all the shows that she was in.
So she saw that there was something in giving this series a second go. Unheard of. Still unheard of.
And what's quite exciting about this episode?
We have someone who actually was an actor on that very first episode.
Which is amazing,
well,
isn't it?
The second
pilot. The second first episode.
The one that has the crew of Captain James Kirk. Because, of course, William Shatner didn't turn up in the original pilot.
In the original pilot, no.
And the only person that actually did, well, there's two.
Two. But they had different characters.
No, Spock was always Spock. Although he was a Martian, not a Vulcan.
Yes. And we also had Nurse Chapel, who wasn't Nurse Chapel.
No, she was number one.
She was number one.
Yes. Which was another thing the executives didn't like. They didn't
How in hell would a woman actually get to a second command?
Yes. So she ended up having to wear a short, because she wore trousers in the first one.
She did, and had dark hair, and she ended up as a blonde, short-skirted nurse.
Yes.
Just shows you what the sensibility of men at the time.
Oh, that's right.
And particularly TV executives at the time.
So we have an interview with Gary Lockwood, who played Gary Mitchell, who was probably, the main villain in this episode. Not just a teeny, teeny cast member. He was an intricate part of the story.
Absolutely, and he's also very cute. But other than that, it wasn't his fault in terms of it. I mean, everybody knows what the first episode of Star Trek is. It doesn't matter if we give spoilers. It's 50 years old.
Yeah, so, you know, find it if you haven't seen it.
I mean, something happened, he became the baddie. He was a goodie to start off with because he was third in command or something.
Well, he was part of the crew of the Enterprise.
But he was very much in the leadership team of the Enterprise. Mm. At the time, because he was lieutenant commander or something.
Mm-hmm,
so
he was
up there in terms of rank, because there's like lieutenant commander.
But we also have someone who's even more important on our interview.
We do. And as we move in, because we're talking about the first season at the moment.
Yes.
And we have to move then onto the second season.
Mm.
And the reason we had to move on to the second was we have an interview with the absolutely delightful Ensign Chekhov.
Yes.
Who, of course, is named...
Walter Koenig.
And
I mean, look, Jerry, I never thought that I would have an original series person on our podcast.
No, absolutely not. And having Walter, who was the cute kid in it, who I think helped young people enjoy the show.
Well, Beatlemania was at its height at that time.
And he had the same haircut.
He had very much.
Davy Jones.
He was the Beatle, well, yes, the Monkees as well, appealing to the English, Beatles were English, but I mean the Monkees to the American
But it was put there because of Davy Jones from the Monkees, basically. And so, they saw that show was doing, and the non-American with the Davy Jones haircut was...
And you also had him there at a time at the height of the Cold War. So the feeling between America and Russia was very, very, you know, on tenterhooks. So you could have had an atom bomb, nuclear bomb go off at any stage. And so you had this Russian on what basically was an American ship, I mean, as such.
And I think that was about the vision of Gene Roddenberry, who we have to say was a secular humanist, who believed that everybody was equal, mm-hmm. that humanity came first.
Yes.
And that the basic utopia was everybody could achieve what they could do to the best of their ability without poverty, without money, and without any kind of real control of having an aristocracy or having race mm-hmm. or having theocracies or having anybody telling us other than the humans are working for the humans. And I think that was a perfect, perfect vision.
It was. And I think that's why a lot of people liked it. Yes, because it gave you hope. It gave you hope that our future was going to be a future where people of all races, all creeds, could work together, could live together in harmony. And, you know, with the occasional alien that caused a bit of a disrupt.
But you could live in harmony with other aliens.
Yes.
Just because they were alien doesn't mean to say that you couldn't get on with them.
No.
And yes, they couldn't quite make Spock a complete Vulcan. They had to put a bit of human in there somewhere. But we had the first African-American woman who appeared in a leadership role.
Yes, and we were very lucky to have met Nichelle Nichols as well.
In fact, I have to tell you a little story here. Very recently, about a year ago, because this is about the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, we were lucky enough to be at a convention of which Walter Koenig, George Takei and Nichelle Nichols were present. And because we're doing interviews sometimes, we don't always get to go into talks.
That's right.
And Eugenia might pop in and take some photos. She's the photographer person for a magazine that we do. But I managed to sit down in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And because I sat down, Eugenia joined me and sat down beside me. And the next minute they brought... Because it was only Walter and Nichelle that was on stage. And then George Takei walks in, and guess what? The tears start flowing.
Not mine. But it's an emotional time. I mean, when you've got such a connection with a show, which we both have, I mean, I have a whole house full of
it. She had. In fact, I'm drinking the NASA cup at the moment, but her glass is a Star Trek glass.
Yes, my glass is a Star
Trek. So, but if I look around, there's a Star Trek lunchbox, there's a Star Trek bottle,
mm-hmm.
a water bottle, and there's a Star Trek coffee warming cup.
Yep.
There's a couple of plates with people's signatures on them. There's other...
There's Star...
And there's a Star Trek... I think she's got...
I have a fob watch.
Yeah.
And I've also got shot glasses.
And that's just within sight. And we happen to be sitting here at the moment as opposed to another room. Occasionally, because Eugenia lives closer to venues and I live, if you know anything about South Australia, and you live near the wine country, which is called the Barossa Valley. So it's about 50 k's generally from the centre of the city. Well, Eugenia probably lives about 15, 20. So it doesn't take as long to get anywhere. So I come and stay in her spare room. Now, when I sleep in that spare room, I sleep with a bucket load of characters from Star Trek. Now, if I was someone that was actually a bit psychotic, I would think some of them were going to jump off the wall. She has in that room her doll collection as...
Excuse me, action figures.
I know, but we do call them dolls. You call them doll collection, too.
No, well, my family actually have named that room the ugly doll room.
And she has been lucky enough over the years to get packaged dolls, action figures, in still in the original packaging. Yep. So they're not the play ones. You're not allowed to play with
them. No, I buy two. So you can play with one and you have to have the other one pristine.
And she's had them autographed.
Yes.
And they've been autographed, there's probably 30, 40?
I think there's over 50.
50 autographed dolls and different characters.
Mm.
So, you know, she's got a Captain Kirk one.
And I have all the captains.
She has all the captains except Christopher Pine.
Christopher Pine, yeah.
Although she does have Christopher Pine's autograph around somewhere.
Yes.
But the amazing thing is I have to sleep with them. Secondly, the amazing thing is all of those characters, a Star Trek fan can walk up to and go, yes, yes, I know them, and name them all.
Mm, that's true.
All of that time. So it's a show that all the characters in it have, oh, I forgot about the figurines on top of the fridge. We're in the kitchen. See, and these are things just in the kitchen.
And you removed the Star Trek clock.
I did remove because it was ticking, and I just turned my head around and looked over at the fridge, and guess who's looking at me? Mr. Spock and Captain Kirk.
Yes.
There's possibly one at the back, which may be another one. So there is a phaser and a medical tricorder pointed at me right at this minute. But we are indulging ourselves because this is a special episode.
It is. But it's amazing. It is just so amazing that a show could spawn so many spin-offs that are so successful as well. And I know a lot of people say, oh, Enterprise wasn't as good, but I think people who are going back and re-watching Enterprise are actually finding the beauty of it as well.
The annoying thing over the song stuff was really annoying. But what I liked about Enterprise, and what I think they were beginning to do really well then, was that Manicato came in the last season. He was telling us the stories in between.
Yeah, the history. So filling in the history.
Well, we were
that
getting
we already knew.
Why Klingons ended up with ridges.
Mm.
Why did we have the eugenics and how they came about? How we had
who was Sarek?
And where all of these things did come from, and how did they meet, and all, like, Manda and him meet.
Yeah.
All of those kind of things, which was really enriching that whole canon, and then it stopped. And now I'm just really annoyed because I enjoyed learning what happened and lead up to Star Trek, the original series.
But this is where a TV show isn't stopped because it's not popular. It's stopped because of political things that were happening inside the TV company itself. And it was just unfortunate they were caught up in this whole UPN plus, I don't
blah,
know.
Blah, 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 blah.
So it wasn't just the fact that it wasn't a good show. It was the fact that the TV production company itself was going through a bad time and changing.
Well, also, I think that they had a new executive, didn't they?
Who
didn't necessarily want to go in that direction.
Mm.
Unfortunately for us, but fortunately, it got us to meet lots of lovely people and lots of lovely interviews. So if you want them, have a listen. We have quite a few of them in previous episodes.
Yes, because we do have interviews with everyone from every aspect of the Star Trek
from
world.
Every series. And this brings us, this special 50th anniversary episode brings us to having people from the original series.
Yes.
So we actually have people from the original series, from the Next Generation, from DS9, from Voyager, and the new movies.
Yes, and Enterprise. You forgot Enterprise.
Forgot Enterprise. So we have interviews. So if you're a Trekkie in as much as us, please, and you haven't listened to the other ones, go back and you will find a Star Trek person somewhere in every fifth episode or something. I don't know. There's quite a few of them. Because for our special 100th edition, our own episode, we had a captain, a first officer, the Grand Nagus, and the first Ferengi in Starfleet, which I think is, you know, an amazing episode as well. So please go and listen to that one too.
Definitely. And if you want the funniest episode and interview we've ever done, you need to find the interview we did with Ethan Phillips and Rene Aubergeois. I mean, that was an amazing, absolutely hilarious interview.
It is. I mean, we sat there for, 10, 15 minutes?
Yeah.
And we didn't say a word, which, of course, is what you want to interview. You don't want to hear us because we talk at the beginning, not at the end. But, I mean, Star Trek, I think you can hear, we both really enjoy Star Trek and in many shapes and forms, and some of us enjoy it and cry over it much more than the other one, but...
And I've been very lucky too. I had a friend who sadly died of cancer, but she started...
We had a friend.
True. We had a friend, but I'm the one that got the book.
Well, she's the one that actually introduced me to Eugenia.
Yes.
Many, many years ago. So it's her fault that the podcast exists.
It is her fault.
So, and Therese was a big fan. And have to remember Therese, who introduced us, and this podcast wouldn't be happening if Therese hadn't introduced
Eugenia.
No,
so in fact, we can dedicate this podcast to Therese.
Absolutely, our friend.
One thing that she did when we first started going to conventions.
She was worse than you.
Oh, she was worse than me with collecting memorabilia. She started a Star Trek encyclopedia well, she had the book, and she thought, what I'll do.
Which I have, and you had a non-adulterated copy.
Yes, and she thought, well, I'll start getting people to sign their, you know, the page they're on and that sort of thing. And when she was dying, I said, I don't care, Therese. I don't want anything from you. The only thing I want is your Star Trek book, and I will keep that going. And she says, no, I'm going to bury it with me. I said, no, you're not.
We could say those kind of things to Therese. We actually have to say, if we are commemorating, this is one little thing that we did. Therese passed away from cancer, as we've mentioned. And, yes, she had a funeral. But at her funeral there were two of the stand-up cardboard cutouts.
Yes, next
and
to
we have
coffin.
To say her coffin, which was bright blue, which was her favourite colour. And one was Spike from Buffy. And the other one was
Quark from Deep Space Nine.
Star Trek. So those were the two things. And then because her family lived in a different state from us and her funeral was in a different state, in South Australia where we're from, we had a memorial service for her. And in that memorial service, what we actually did was do Buffy stuff. We, like with the Ferengi, we sold desiccated parts of Therese to raise money for charity.
Which was sherbet.
Which was sherbet. So it was with, you know, all those things on it. And then we actually, as a group en masse, we stood there and we had a Klingon
war cry. Their funeral
their
cry.
Their funeral cry for her, and we watched it at her, one of her favourite episodes of Star Trek.
Yes.
In memorial to her. And we also, in particular, we took some of her autographs that she had.
Yes.
And we auctioned them off to the people who were in that memorial group to raise money for a hospice that she had spent some time in. So if it wasn't for Star Trek, we wouldn't have had that kind of ceremony for our friend who was so enamored with this show and enjoyed it and introduced us, because she happened to have something on her desk at work which was related to Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked with Therese and I went, oh, Star Trek, I really like Star Trek. And that's what started it off. So Star Trek was able to make connections.
It does.
And friendships.
And it still does, because
We met many.
We ended up being in a Star Trek club, which we were founding members of. And through that, we have just gained so many other friends.
We got to host a convention and run a convention with a Star Trek captain.
That's true. We hosted Avery Brooks. As Jerry has beautifully said about our life with trees, but she gave me the book eventually, and I now have, she had about 60 signatures in there from different Star Trek people, and I've now added probably another 60. And, you know, like, even if they had a 5-minute episode in an, you know, 5-minute walk-on part in an episode, it goes in the book.
I actually might, although I'm expected to die before, because I do things that Eugenia doesn't. And I have actually put in a request, if she goes, I want a particular sculpture of a particular beautiful Cylon, maybe I'll make them both. Because she knows that I'd appreciate the book. And I would carry on the tradition.
So this is the thing that I think that Star Trek does. It brings people together. It gives people hope. It gives people something to talk about. Sometimes, I mean, over its history, Star Trek fans have been very much maybe put down occasionally. So we've had to ride through that.
And it's no different, I have to say, than a football team, a group of people going out dressing up. And it's becoming normal now, though,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's becoming normal. Because I was actually, we were at a convention today in Adelaide, and Eugenie is, as I said, the photographer that runs off and gets photos, and I sit outside and do something, which means I'm never going to get her statue probably or her book. But I was sitting there watching, and it was amazing just sitting there to see how many people were still wearing cosplay as Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And a really good one came past me, and it was from Star Trek, James Kirk's uniform from Star Trek from the first movie.
Right. Oh, really?
From Star Trek.
You know
the one with the woolen, the thick woolen top?
Second movie. The first movie where they wore those pyjama-looking things that were horrible.
I think this was the dress uniform in the first one, though.
Second movie.
Is it the second
Wrath
movie?
Wrath of Khan, yeah.
Maybe I'm just sort of ignoring the first one.
Oh, no, they were bad costumes.
Bigger.
Oh, yes,
they were pink and they were beige.
Yeah, and they had,
it was then, it was a really nice one from the second.
Yes.
And I hadn't seen too many, you know, and he was a fairly, you know, I'd have to say that he probably wore exactly what James Kirk wore underneath his costume
mm-hmm.
because it was a very similar fit. But it looked good. It looked good. And the fact that someone's still wearing uniforms from that time in that show shows its commitment to fandom, if you want to say, and how committed fans are to doing it. There were many Star Trek dresses, still women wearing the red dress.
Today I saw there was a girl wearing an original series uniform with a triple on her shoulder. And she would have been probably in her early 20s. Yep. So it is. It's still alive.
And I saw actually one of the best Seven of Nines.
I did too. I saw her, the girl
in the red. Yes. And she had that. And she was, her actual cosplay outfit was beautiful. It had all the markings that on it. And she was perfectly the shape for it.
Mm.
So it was very. And it was one of those ones you went, oh, wow, that's a really good costume as they walk past.
Mm-hmm.
And people are not ashamed to actually stand up and be counted these days.
No, whereas I think in the past...
We were.
And Galaxy Quest shows that very well. But it was something that you say you're a Trekkie and you go, oh, yeah, you get all that dressed up stuff, you know. And
we've never dressed up. We're not dresser uppers.
No. I have the occasional painted jeans and that sort of thing in Star Trek themes, but that's a
Doc Martens, and occasionally I think you've got a Doc Martin, or is that a Doctor Who Doc Martin? You've got a galaxy on it anyway, one of your Doc Martens. And of course she wears lots of earrings that happen to have sci-fi themes.
Yes, but it is incredible. And of course now what we've got too, and this is our other interview that we have, is that we have fans taking their fandom to the next level of producing their own Star Trek shows. And in particular, we're going to talk about Star Trek Continues, which is not just every run-of-the-mill day fans. These are people who work in the...
Well, some of them are professional actors.
That's what I mean. They work in the industry. They're voice...
They're related to some of the people.
Yes. They're voiceover actors. They're actors. They're people who work in the industry.
Directors.
Yes. And
production.
And Star Trek Continues, which is headed by Vic Meningo. I can never say his name. If you're an anime person, because I know you know who I'm talking about. He's very well known in the voiceover world.
It's Vic Meningo, isn't it?
I don't know how to say his name.
She's hopeless.
Yes, I am. But he has...
She's Australian. Actually, I have to say, Australians are very bad at pronouncing other people's names from other cultures.
But he looks like James T. Kirk.
He does, and he acts like James T. Kirk. But, I mean, that's... And the reason we're talking about Star Trek Continues is it is an original series fan production of Star Trek Continues, because there's many of them out there. There's hundreds of them.
There is.
From different countries around the world. There's animation. One of our favourites is an animated production called Star Trek Aurora.
Mm-hmm.
There is... I mean, we have to say that we actually even wrote for Trekkie magazine.
Yes, Trekkie Central.
Trekkie Central, which is still on issue, issuu.com. And you can see how much Star Trek has influenced people to write magazines. It's influenced them to make their own movies. Mm. It's influenced them to make their own animation. I'm sure I've mentioned it another time, is that there was a worldwide course run by a professor who teaches in his university curriculum Star Trek.
Yes. So it happens. And these people, because we also have on this cast Chris Doohan, who is the son of the wonderful James Doohan, who played Scotty. So there's a very strong connection. And this group of people, along with Star Trek Renegades, along with Star Trek Excelsior, along with... Anaxar. You know, there's lots of them happening now.
Just put Star Trek fan fiction into the web and you will come up with Wikipedia article that will lead you to lots and lots of different places. But it is inspired so many people.
It has. So we actually have two actors from that show too, Star Trek Continues.
So this is our special anniversary issue, that our episode for Star Trek's 50th.
It is. So we have Michelle Specht and Kim Stinger, who played Dr. McKenna, and Uhura on the show. And they talk a little bit about how they were starting in the show. So It's wonderful. It's something to celebrate. It really is. I mean, I was excited with Doctor Who when it turned 50, and I just hope that Paramount and the American television, whoever has got rights to Star Trek, do something to really celebrate this amazing show.
I mean, Doctor Who and Star Trek are two television shows that have had their music played by orchestras, though.
Yes.
Not many TV shows actually end up with a philharmonic orchestra playing the music from it. And every person on the planet knows the theme song to, you know.
Yep.
Everybody knows when that starts, it is Star Trek. And that's where we learned about that really weird instrument that you actually play with your hands.
Yes, that's right.
That, of course, Sheldon loves.
Yes, he does. He does.
From the Big Bang Theory. But everybody knows that distinctive sound.
The themes. We all know the themes to all the Star Trek episodes. You know,
I remember
different shows.
A story of a friend of ours from Gifts of the Geek who allowed us to interview people they bring out on occasion. And he said that one night after a convention, they were walking down the street and there was about 10 or 12 of them and they all started singing the song from Enterprise because they all knew the words. So, I mean, that's what our Star Trek, this is, and these were young people to older people. So it brought a group of ages together. And that's one thing that we've learned from geekdom.
Yes.
Is it doesn't matter what age you are, it's what you care about and what you enjoy, and you can share that with 20 to 70-year-olds.
Well, again, today at the convention I saw a son, obviously, in his 40s, who was wheeling around his mother, who looked probably in her late
70s
or
something?
No, late 80s. She was
really?
In a wheelchair in her late 80s, and she was going up to Rainbow's
son, Frank's from Stargate.
From Stargate Atlantis, to have an autograph. And I mean, where do you see... Well, I suppose you do see that in sport a bit, or probably a lot. That's probably the...
But you don't usually see the mother getting the autograph, the 80-year-old getting the autograph.
Well, sometimes you do. But, I mean, I guess sport is the other area where it does bring people together and people of different ages can talk to each other about things. But where else do you do it? It really is a very levelling playing field for people when they come
in. Yeah, and I wonder, this is just a speculation and I'm probably talking out my ears, that because of technology and the advancements, is sporting changing? Because not as many people are necessarily always going because there are so many different ways to appreciate events like gaming and so on. It's like motor racing isn't getting the audience it once did because technology allowed you to be the motor racer yourself in a game. So is technology in geekdom actually the next big sporting thing where you can participate in fandom much more easily? Because people, as I said, not only do they make real big productions, but if you go on YouTube and put in Star Trek, you're going to find lots of little things that people do.
And all sorts of things, even people putting... film clips to music clips, you know. So
knitting? Knitting patterns? You can find knitting patterns. Because in our magazine what we do is every year is we try to find things for people to do over the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is, because I compile some of it, is looking for knitting patterns that are geeky and there's always a Star Trek and Doctor Who one. I mean,
that's it.
You can have Captain Kirk. And then we have a lady who with Kim who... His Kim Locke, the artist. We have met someone through, you know, the joy of Star Trek fan, where Kim, who's an artist, and she draws lots of Star Trek pictures of Kirk and Spock and other things. So it's inspired lots of people in different, lots of ways.
That's it. And podcasting, it's just...
Well, we're here. I mean, we have to say that our episode right at the beginning was actually because of Star Trek.
Yes.
If you've listened to our third episode, you'll actually hear one of the captains.
Yes.
On our third episode. I mean, we talked about it in our second episode because we had a few interesting comments from different people. But in our third episode, we had a captain from Star Trek. So, and we were quite excited. I was lucky enough to go to the world premiere in 2009 of the new movie series, the Reimagined series, and we have a captain on it. So, and now in our special 50th anniversary, we have an original cast member too.
Two original cast members.
So we're just geeked out.
We're so lucky. And with that, I think we probably better
talk too much.
We have, and we need to let people listen to the interviews because they are excellent. So we'll start with Michelle and Kim, who at the present moment are acting in episodes of Star Trek Continues and keeping the flame of the original series very much alive.
And people who are in Star Trek are turning up in that.
Yes, they are.
So it's not just those actors from the official Star Trek.
But not only Star Trek, but from other sci-fi genres. So we've had Colin Baker from Doctor Who. We've had Lou Ferrigno from Incredible Hulk. Daniel Logan from Star Wars. Jamie Bamber from Battlestar Galactica.
All turning up in this series, so please go
Gigi Edgley's going to be in the next
from
one.
From Farscape.
So, you know, it's everybody's there. It's like the who's who.
And a couple of people we have had. We do have an interview with Gigi Edgley and an interview with Lou Ferrigno.
Yes.
And we will have an interview with Jamie Bamber in the future.
Yes. So you and Daniel Logan.
And
we do have an interview with Colin Baker.
Us. We just had to throw that in.
So whose 50th are we celebrating?
Not our 50th year. And it's not our 100th episode or 50th episode.
No, nothing it's like just, that.
We're having a geek out. So we were doing the interview with Michelle and Kim.
Yes. And then we'll have the interview with Gary Lockwood. And we'll then end with Walter Koenig, the wonderful Mr. Chekhov.
We're making you stay and listen.
Yes. And we have Supernova to thank for all of our interviews. And they come from Australia, of course, and you will find them on www.supernova.com.au.
And, of course, we have Lionel Medford, who's the publicist for Supernova, and he's from lionelmedfordpublicity.com.
How did you get involved with Star Trek Continues?
Well, I was working on a Star Trek fan film, another Star Trek fan film, when I met Vic Mignogna and the lovely Michelle Specht. And I was playing Uhura at that time. So when Vic started Star Trek Continues, he invited me to continue playing the role. And I loved playing the role. I loved working with them, so it was a perfect fit.
And Michelle?
And I am lucky enough to be part of Star Trek Continues because I'm engaged to the creator, exec producer, and director. So, you know what? It helps. Let's just be honest, ladies.
The couch came into play a little bit there.
Yeah, well, the couch came first. And then, yes.
Now, are you both geeks?
Absolutely. Huge sci-fi geek.
And I know you're a bit of a Barrowman fan at the moment.
I am a huge Barrowman fan. I'm a huge Doctor Who, DS9, Battlestar Galactica, you name it. I love it. Love it. Stargate, everything. I was raised on TNG. That was my first introduction to Star Trek. And then I got into the original Star Trek movies and then actually started watching the original series. But, yeah, I mean, it all bleeds into itself and it's all wonderful. Love it.
And what about you, Kim?
I honestly backed into it once I was older. But I was a huge fan of Michelle Nichols when I was younger. She was so pretty on TV. And, you know, she was pushing buttons and I wanted to do what she was doing. So as I got older and I was invited to start playing her, I learned more about the show. And just, I mean, Gene Roddenberry is a visionary. So I've learned a lot and I have complete respect for it. And now I geek out over Game of Thrones and, you know.
Are you teaching her, Michelle?
Oh, I try. I try. She's a very able-bodied student, so there's a lot to learn here.
So is this your first type of convention that you've done, or have you been doing conventions already?
We were lucky enough to premiere our very first episode, Pilgrim of Eternity, at Phoenix Comic Con 2 years ago, and we had no idea what to expect when we did that. And what we did was we showed up in the Great Hall. They had it screened in the largest room that they had. We had no idea what to expect, and walked in and found almost 5,000 people waiting to see this. And it's amazing how people who know and love real original series Star Trek can recognize other people who know and love original series Star Trek. There's a mutual love and respect. They understand just by watching the very first few frames that those of us that are making Star Trek Continues are so attentive to detail the way that they are. We look at every little...
Know it.
Yes!
And if you get it wrong...
Oh, exactly.
Right.
You're going to know about
it. Oh, we'll know. Yeah. You got that right. So every little button, every little piece of fabric, every little costume braid, every little nook and cranny was done with such care and attention to detail. So.
Now, you're playing two very important women in the Star Trek world. Have you looked at the way you portray those in the, you know, the 2000s? Like, as 21st century women?
Slightly different than the 1960s women.
Yeah. Have you made a difference? Have you been assertive about that?
I have to say the skirts are still the same.
Exactly.
Well, if you wear it well, you wear it well. I love the way Uhura was kind of the power behind the power in the show, and I love how that's continued. I think that what I've learned from her is sometimes power is not about position, it's about influence.
Yes.
And I see how she wields, and I think that's true for a lot of women in power, actually. And so I appreciate and respect how she gets things done and operates and maneuvers within a male-dominated environment with great success as being very influential with the power that she has.
Correct. There is a delicate balance going on here because we are trying to recreate a well-beloved and already established universe that was absolutely a product of its time and culture.
Absolutely.
So we're trying to honor that and recreate that absolutely, but we can't help but bring in modern mindset because we are a product of our present time. So melding those two worlds, there is a bit of a balancing act happening. But I do think it can be done with great taste, and I do think it can be done honoring the past, but with the introduction of another strong female role, like Dr. McKenna, someone who is an equal with the main three in rank and with influence, who's able to sit there at the conference table and give her two cents, and it's heard, and it not being an over-sentimentalized version of what a woman's influence would be, but yeah, something with great merit and an additional voice that has something important to say while not being just a product of the past of where this first show originally came from. I think there is.
So you're doing this out of love, aren't you, really? Because it's not for profit. You're offering this as free for people to be able to view. I mean, that's an amazing thing to do in this world, really.
Right.
There's a place for this. There's a place for stories that bring out the best of us and that go beyond superficial car crashes and explosions.
And Star Trek does that.
Star Trek absolutely does that. And even someone who didn't grow up with Star Trek, you know, myself, can see and respect that. And because of technology now, we're communicating so quickly and it's reaching so far and so fast that, you know, these stories just touch people worldwide.
And here you are in Australia doing the same thing.
I know. That's amazing.
Exactly.
You know, and there's absolutely a place for it because I think what made the original Star Trek so special is that it did call to our nobler selves. And that's what made it truly special. It wasn't just the communicators and the amazing technological advances that we saw in it, but what it truly was with those stories challenging our ethical boundaries, asking very moral and ethical questions, and bringing out the better parts of ourselves. That was truly what made Star Trek Star Trek, and that's what we're trying to bring back, that same spirit and that same calling to our higher humanity.
Yes. And we wish you every success in that.
Oh, thank you.
Life, Jim, but not as we know it, not as we know it, not as we know it. It's life, Jim, but not as we know it, not as we know it. Captain.
Gary Bukin, we'll talk about Star Trek a little bit.
All right.
Now, you were in the second pilot.
I was.
And you played an amazing part in that. How did you get involved in it?
Well, I had done a television series called The Lieutenant, and Gene Roddenberry was the creator of it. And we did 40 shows. And when the show was over, I got the new Kubrick film without, you know, 2001. Stanley, got Kubrick in my mind. Roddenberry called me up, Gene called me up, and he said, "Listen, I made a pilot for Star Trek and it didn't sell. and they told me to try to get you, and so I wrote a part for you, and I'd like you to do the second pilot. They've given me money. It's very seldom has that ever happened in television. And I said, well, Gene, I'm going out to do 2001 A Space Odyssey, and I don't know if I want to do your pilot, you know. And he said, No. He said, have a look at the script. He said, we really wrote a really interesting show. And then he made a funny line. He said, you're going to play God, and we all know that's who you think you are. Which wasn't too, you know, I was a pretty cocky young man. But anyway, the point is I played God, and I... You saw it, did you?
Yes. Oh, yes. Often.
Oh, I get hit with the, you know.
Even the remastered, which is...
You seen the remastered?
Oh, they've done a great job with that.
Yeah. So anyway, I do it, and candidly, it's a very hard job because I have the silver eyes, and I'm a bit embarrassed about it, you know, because it was, you know, I did the whole thing blind because I couldn't see, and it was a very, very, very difficult job, and I was glad when it was over. So now I meet Keir, I'm ready to do 2001. Stanley's not ready for us. I go down to Rome for a couple weeks. I come back. There's per diem there for me at my agent's office. I go in, I get it. Some Englishman insults me. Hey, Yank, you want to throw dice for that? I beat him. Some guy from New York joins us. We throw a dice on the floor. We clean this guy out. And his name was Stanley Baker. He was an English act.
Yes.
And the guy from New York and I are standing there, and then the Brits walk out. I look at him, I said, hey, man, cool, huh? And he said, you're Gary Lockwood. I said, yeah, I am. And he said, you are? I don't remember who he was. He said, yeah, I work for NBC. I said, what do you do? And he said, you know that pilot you did, Star Trek? And I said, oh, man, that was a terrible job. He said, well, it's going on the air. Anyway, I didn't ever see it. I was living in Europe and doing movies on the continent and all that. And some years later, I'm back in America, and Roddenberry called me up. And I think they were off the air by then. And he said, hey, did you ever see the pilot? I said, no. So he sent a car, because he knew I never watched a lot of things I did if I didn't care for him. And I said, all right. He said, well, he sent a car to my house, picked me up. I think he took me to Paramount. They had left MGM. No, it was Desilu Studio where we saw that pilot. And I saw it, and I thought it was kind of cool, you know. I mean, it was fun. And so I said, well, thank you, Gene. So I saw it on the big screen, you know.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, but I shouldn't speak in any way badly about Star Trek, because we've been on the road. I've been on the road 20 some years signing autographs, and I've made a lot of money because of Star Trek.
Captain's log supplemental.
At Paramount, all the Trekkies came. There were like 5,000 of them. And there's Shatner and Nimoy and all that. I don't care for those guys. They don't like me. Gotta get it out. I can kick their ass. Or then that. So the end of the story is, and they know that too, and that makes it good too. So anyway, Robert Roddenberry, he's got all these Trekkies in there, and everything. He's a little drunk. Everybody, you know, I'm just there with a couple pals of mine. He sends a car for me. He wanted me to come to this party. So anyway, it's very funny. I'm sitting down there, and I'm talking to a couple of cowboy buddies of mine who were stumping on it and all that. And I'm not going on stage or anything. Roddenberry bangs a microphone. He says, I have somebody here I made come here tonight. I had to send a car to get him to come. And I want him to come up on stage. I'd like Gary Lockwood to come up here.
That may have happened later on. I don't remember.
So I go up. And Roddenberry said, real loud. All right, I just want to thank the guy that got us on television. And I think it was a little bit to piss them off. I'm not sure, but, you know, but I do remember him saying that.
No, well, that fight between you and Shatner, that was pretty, the fight scene between you and Shatner was pretty good.
I helped choreograph some of that.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I had done that kind of work before I was an actor. Sally Kellerman remembers.
Yeah. Symbolism in his film.
Walter, this is a real pleasure to be able to interview you today.
Thank you.
With 50 years coming up, what sort of plans do you think are being made for that celebration?
I don't know really what's going on behind closed doors. I imagine that there's going to be something, Paramount's going to do something of note. I have really no idea. I don't know. I never know if they have a real handle on how impressive the fandom is, Star Trek fandom is. And therefore, I don't know how committed they are. I think what they'll probably be doing is promoting the new movie.
Yep.
And that will be the reason for the celebration. And then we'll be just invited there as, background.
The founding fathers and daughters and sons and mothers and everything else of the series. The other thing that you were very iconic in was at Babylon 5. Your Bester character was amazing.
I had great fun with that. That was a very, very cherished experience. I'm very happy that I had that opportunity.
Was that your idea about the fist being closed?
It was. I saw the size of the guys that I was going to be acting opposite, Bruce Boxleitner and Jerry, I don't know his last name. And they were both well over 6 feet. They were 6'2 or 6'3. And I thought, if I'm not going to be intimidated as a character, I need to feel that I'm very strong. And my sense was this that was inoperable was a handicap that I had overcome. And that I was all that much stronger for having to deal with that and having successfully done it.
Because you sort of don't pick up onto it for a while, and then you sort of see it, and then you sort of think, oh, that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
So did the writers sort of play on that a little bit then?
They didn't do anything with it. They just let me... I didn't consult with them. I just did it, and they were happy.
Now, you're not just an actor, Walter, are you? You've directed and you've written. You're an author as well.
Yeah.
So can you tell us something about those?
Well, like everybody, I wrote the obligatory autobiography.
And which we read.
Very good, and we will read, yes.
And I wrote a satiric science fiction novel called Buck Alice and the Actor Robot, which very few people get. Yeah. It's been published by three different publishers. Three times.
That's fantastic.
But it's probably only sold 200 copies.
But we should encourage people to go out and get it. Where can they get it? Can they get it on Amazon?
I think so, or some antique store.
And you've also done a comic as well.
I did a Star Trek comic book. I did a graphic novel about vampires called Things to Come, which is four issues. They combined into one large issue. And I did another series of three comic books back in the 90s, and I can't remember the title at the moment. But they weren't bad.
Now, you've also been involved lately in a lot of new Star Trek fan-based series as well.
I've been over.
In Star Trek fan-based series.
Yeah, I've done a couple. I did one that was mostly online. And another one that is cost about $1 million, so it's gone beyond being an amateur production. Very strong performance by a lot of people. It's called Star Trek Renegade. And that's going to have its initial release in June of this year. Yeah, and I played Chekhov as a 143-year-old
Admiral. Finally, we're not
elected. 143 years, and I got it.
So, how does it feel to be loved by so many people? I mean, it's a question for most of your life. Obviously, with the Star Trek universe, if you want to put it, you're an icon in terms of it. Do you really think it's impacted on you personally?
I think it's given me some confidence. I think I'm by nature more withdrawn. I've felt a lot of positive reinforcement over the years that I mean at conventions. That makes me feel better about myself. Gives me a little greater sense of self-esteem.
That first convention that was held for Star Trek, where you walked out, and I think, were there about 3,000 people or something there? That's the very first one ever?
The first one we did in New York was like that. It's huge. There were people around the block twice. So it's in a whole hotel. Yeah, that was quite amazing. That was 1975, 76, somewhere along the way. And I found that to be really extraordinary. Bear in mind that I wasn't on the show the first year. So this was very, very unique to me. Very, very new.
I think it was unique to the whole fandom as well, to all fandoms. It had never happened before, I don't think, not to that extent.
I don't think that magnitude.
But even though you went on the full three seasons, I mean, you can't think of Star Trek without Chekhov.
Well, that's nice.
It's just Chekhov. The cute one. I mean, he was. The cute one. The Beatle-inspired one.
Right.
But we're going. Yep. We've been just given the wind-up. You need to go to your photographs. Sorry.
So thank you so much.
Absolutely.
It has been a great honor. Thank you. Nice meeting you.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
50 years, Jerry. 50 years.
And four people on this, all doing stuff about the original episode. It was exciting for us to meet Walter and to get a chance to interview him. And Lionel.
Well, I must admit.
And if Lionel listens to this, I'm going to love him forever. Because he just made our whole year when he allowed us to have the opportunity to interview.
That's right. Well, I think I even cried in that one too.
Yeah, you probably did. She does that on occasion. And then, of course, meeting Gary Lockwood. Not only was Gary in Star Trek, he was in 2001 A Space Odyssey. That iconic, and you'll have to keep listening to the podcast, because sometime there will be about 2001, and of course with Kia DeLeo, who was there. I mean, we are just so lucky, Eugenie, aren't we?
We are. Not only are we, I guess, celebrating Star Trek, but we're also celebrating the fact that this is a show that did bring us together, brought other people together. Lots of friends of ours have been influenced by it. We have just been enriched so much by it. Your husband, I think, has lost a little bit from it because you end up being... You know how you have golf widows? Well, he's a bit of a...
Con widower.
Jerry says, I'm going. See you in 2 days.
Or you have to drop me off at and pick me up at.
So, Jim, thank you. It's wonderful that you allow Jerry to come and that, you know, you're so patient with us when all we do is talk sci-fi when we're together.
And I must admit, sometimes Eugenia comes to my house, I make her dinner, we sit down, do a couple of podcasts, or more than a couple sometimes, but we usually start at 2 and finish at 6 or something like that in the morning. We've done that once.
We have, at six.
It's just been very enriching, and I think because we both were fans of Star Trek, way back, we get to do what we love now.
So for all those people out there, if you do have a love in sci-fi, whatever your passion is, look, go for it.
And bring out your inner geek, nerd, sport fan, whatever. I mean, we were lucky that we started this podcast through all of those events, and we've interviewed amazingly many actors and people who are interesting over the years. And we do it for the love of it. We don't make money out of the show. We don't sell it. We don't put advertising in it. We don't do any of those things. Because we know other people love it too, and they love to hear other other guests and actors, and they love to hear it from people who are as much enamored with the show as they are. And this is our big gig out.
It is.
We've never done this gigging out much before. We'll stuff it because it's the special 50th anniversary.
That's it. So in the words of Gene Roddenberry, to boldly go where no one has gone before. And that's what we wish for everybody.
Well, you can do a podcast if you want. It's a good, but don't compete with us.
No, that's right. Pick a different topic.
No.
No. But that's, I think that's the thing of Roddenberry's dream, isn't it? That to dream and to reach that dream and to be passionate about something and to fight for justice and to make sure that the world's a better place to live in.
And you leave it behind that way.
Yeah. I mean, what more can you ask? I mean, it's a wonderful philosophy, and I think more and more people should revisit Star Trek. And I'm hoping the new Star Trek series
gives that a little bit of hope. But I'm afraid you have anticipation of fear, don't you? At the same time, it's going to be rubbish, and therefore it's going to destroy the legend, sort of thing, and make people go, "Oh God!" Or I'm excited because it might be brilliant.
Yes,
and it's a whole new set of autographs we have to get. People we have to interview.
And new action figures that I might have to find.
Oh, God. God, it's like waking up with all these eyes watching you.
Well, I think we need to finish off. And what more can we say but live long and prosper?
Absolutely. And I've got my fingers up and I've got them stretched out on both hands. Because I can do it on both hands. My husband can't do it very well. He has to sort of almost push one out. So for all of us out there that can actually do this live long and prosper sign, that's what we're doing.
And boldly go. See you, Jerry.
See you, Jerry. Bye.